This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 10 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I was thinking about how I could frame this particular show because there's just so much to go over. Just an insane amount of information. We have all these wide receivers and running backs and tight ends, these fantasy-relevant players that were just drafted over the weekend. There are so many different players and situations that I want to talk about and go over. But then I realized the month of May literally just started. Today is the first day of May. We have months to go over these individual situations. So let me frame up this podcast in sort of a different way for you today. In fantasy football, we often bucket the many inputs that go into how our particular player produces or will produce into talent and opportunity. Talent is pretty obvious. It's whether or not the player is good at football, and opportunity is obvious too. It's the type of volume that that player might see. Both things are very, very important, and they do work together. You can be an untalented player who still sees opportunity, maybe like Robert Kelly, but you can also be a supremely talented player who doesn't perform well, maybe Trent Richardson, or maybe you're looking at kind of freak athletes like Christian Michael. Judging opportunity is one of the most important yet difficult things to do in fantasy because it can come down to just general coaching decisions. Every year there are situations, especially at the running back position, where we scream at our televisions because coaches seem to play the inferior player instead of playing the guy who's got a ton of upside. You know, like Terrence West and Kenneth Dixon last year, or Jerick McKinnon versus Matt Asiata last year. It happens all the time. But one way of looking at this side of the equation that I think is underutilized is by reading between the lines of what front offices are doing during the draft or even free agency. You know, with free agency, if a dude gets a big deal, the chances are he's going to get first crack at a particular gig on a team. But with a draft, if teams are either spending or not spending high equity picks on a position, we can see whether the team is content with what they have or if they're not. It's really such a simple idea. You know, if you spend a lot of money, or if you spend a high pick, chances are you're going to use that player. But like I said, it's one of the things that I think that the average fantasy player doesn't look at enough. So let's look at it enough. We've got months to see whether or not someone like Dalvin Cook will live up to his average draft position as a Viking. We'll get there. But for now, let's just look at the decisions that were made by these teams and what it means from a logic standpoint. On previous podcasts, I talked about the fact that the running back opportunity in football just didn't seem nearly as great in the short term as a lot of people or fantasy analysts thought. Part of that was because there weren't a lot of landing spots for players where they could just step in and see 170, 180 carries or more. But part of it was because we always think that we know more than we do with prospects and how teams feel about their current roster. For instance, we loved Derrick Henry last year, but he didn't land in an ideal spot. He went to Tennessee and shared a backfield with DeMarco Murray. And then on the other side of this, we have teams who appear like they are going to get an early round running back or they're going to spend up at the running back position, and then they just don't. And that happened again this year. Two teams that I felt were near locks to draft at least one running back or get an early down running back were Philadelphia and Detroit. Philly, coming into the draft, had Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, and Wendell Smallwood as primary ball carriers. But it was thought that Ryan Matthews was going to be released. The Eagles did get a running back, so you might look at their draft and you might be yelling at me right now listening to this, because they did get a running back, but they didn't get the traditional running back. They ended up getting Donnell Pumphrey, who, if anything, profiles more as a Sproles type back and is certainly not an early down guy at a buck 70. The dude weighs 170 pounds. He weighs as much as like a Great Dane. What this means is that Philly is either content with Smallwood and Matthews and they won't get rid of Matthews, or they could be one of those teams that goes out and looks to sign a veteran, maybe like a LeGarrette Blount. That's where things are at right now with Philly. With Detroit, though, I think it's a little bit different. Ameer Abdullah, when healthy, could be a near 200 carry back in that offense, which means his market share is going to be decently high. It's just that they are a pass first team. I mean, you look at the last 6 years, their pass attempts to rush attempts, their ratios, 1.7, 1.79, 1.53, 1.42, 1.89, 1.87. Just for some context, their lowest ratio would still rank in the top half in 2016. The lowest ratio they saw over the last 6 years. we know it's one of the most pass-friendly teams in the NFL. So a decent market share in that offense just doesn't yield a ton of rushing volume, which is a good thing for a guy like Amir Abdullah, who has now shown that he might be a little injury prone or that he might be not be able to hold up. But even their GM talked about saying that Amir Abdullah is their guy. He is their starting running back. And right now, Amir Abdullah in fantasy football is going in the Matt Forte range, which is just a crime. That should not be happening. Their depth chart is now Amir Abdullah, Theo Riddick, Zach Zenner. Now, each of those guys do something very different. Zenner might be the goal line guy. Theo Riddick, obviously, is going to catch a lot of balls out of the backfield. Amir Abdullah kind of does everything. So it's not like Amir Abdullah's ceiling is out of control, because there are other backs who can do things, but it's not like those running backs are that great. So I think Amir Abdullah is a huge, huge winner in this draft, because that front office decided to not get a running back. I want to stick with Detroit really quick and talk about their third round selection in Kenny Golladay. If I had a dude at wide receiver in this class, if it was my guy, you know, everyone has their guys, I think that it might be Golladay. Going into the draft, I was surprised that my prospect model had him ranked pretty highly. But then I realized that it's because his market share numbers in Northern Illinois were incredible, and he's got good size. He ran a 4.5 40 at 6'4", 218, giving him a really nice height-adjusted speed score. By the way, now that I brought up my prospect model, just so that you guys know, this model is not overly complex or anything. It's a way for me to get an initial read on this draft class. Like, I use other models. I do projections every year, for instance, but my projections are not because I'm solely picking players in fantasy football based on these projections. I think everyone who's really, really into fantasy, I shouldn't say everyone, because people listening to this show don't have time or energy to build a projections model. But I think that it's a really good exercise to go through and to just get an initial look at a particular field or sample. You can really see how target distribution works, and you can really see if a guy is overvalued significantly or undervalued significantly. So when I use projections, I'm not doing the projections because I'm going to strictly draft my team based on those projections. It's really just a way for me to see if there are massive efficiencies or inefficiencies in the fantasy football world. And the same thing goes with the prospect evaluation. I want to look at this model and see who gets spit out and looks good within the model. And the model is based off of what I've written about at NumberFire, where I know that certain pieces of production, like receiving market share, or for running backs, the market share of attempts that they see in their backfield, I know that some of those things translate very strongly to the NFL level. So I use those things and I weigh them accordingly, and that's how I get these prospects spit back out. I use their measurables as well. Golladay is a guy who came out ranked a lot higher than I thought, because not a lot of people were talking about him. And it was really cool because he ended up being a third round pick. So my model matched up a guy who some might think was overdrafted. But to me, I don't think he was overdrafted, only because my model said so. And I think it's a really, really fun fit. You look at what the Lions have in their three receivers right now. They have Marvin Jones as their deep threat, who will see a much higher average depth of target in that offense than the rest of the team. I mean, last season, Marvin Jones averaged 12.6 air yards per catch, while Anquan Boldin and Golden Tate averaged 5.46 and 4.86 respectively. And then you have Golden Tate now, who can play in the slot more, his traditional spot, because before they had Anquan Boldin who could play there as well. And then you have Golladay on the outside. He may not see the field early in the season on early downs or anything, but I'm telling you guys, in a weak draft class, I would not be shocked at all if we look back and say, man, Kenny Golladay is a top three or four wide receiver from that class. I think he fits perfectly into this Lions offense. I think he complements the receivers they already have. And the fact that this front office spent a third round pick on him shows that they like him too. We also saw Joe Mixon go to Cincinnati. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because it's a clear sign that the Bengals are indeed sick and tired of the backfield that they have. Which, a backfield, by the way, that has two second-round picks in Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. But Hill was not very good in 2016, and each consecutive year, according to NumberFire metrics, he's been getting worse. His success rate, or the percentage of positive runs by a running back, has decreased each year in the NFL. His best season was his rookie year, and it's not even close. And then meanwhile, Giovanni Bernard's coming off an ACL tear, so who knows what his 2017 outlook is going to look like. So the combination of the early down back in Hill being ineffective and the pass catching back in Bernard coming off the injury is why Mixon does have some really interesting opportunity in year one. And again, to the theme of what these front offices are doing and thinking, the fact that they would spend a second round pick on Joe Mixon tells us that they're not huge believers in what they have in their backfield, despite the fact that they spent second round picks on both of the assets in their backfield. This isn't a fifth round running back that they brought in for competition to motivate Jeremy Hill, who is always reported to be an unmotivated running back. This is Joe Mixon, who's coming with lots of baggage to this backfield, a very, very, very talented running back. It's a huge, huge hit for Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. So one of the more interesting second rounders was Carolina selecting Curtis Samuel after getting Christian McCaffrey in the first. You know, when I first saw the pick, and I live in Charlotte, I got a lot of friends here who are big Panthers fans, and when I first saw the pick, my instant reaction in texting them was, that seems incredibly redundant. Instead of a running back who can catch passes out of the backfield like Christian McCaffrey, you have a wide receiver who can carry the football. Curtis Samuel had 97 carries during his junior year at Ohio State to go along with his 74 receptions. But the reason I'm bringing him up on today's show is because it was another clear sign that this Carolina front office wants to change the offense. It would be completely ridiculous to continue to run the same power schemes with McCaffrey, which is what I mentioned on Friday's show. And then Curtis Samuel, his selection, doesn't seem like a natural fit in what this offense has done with Cam Newton. But if there was one huge need that the Carolina Panthers needed offensively in this draft, it was speed. They needed speed. They have Kelvin Benjamin on the outside, who is apparently Kelvin Benjamin weighs 280 pounds, guys. Can we talk about that? Kelvin Benjamin is like an offensive lineman right now. Or so that's what reports are saying. Kelvin Benjamin's not a fast guy. Devin Funchess comes out a big body guy, tight end. He's a wide out, but he's not a fast guy. He did drop some weight, but he's not a guy that's going to stretch the field consistently. He's not going to beat safeties deep consistently. So then what do? They get Curtis Samuel, who ran a 4.3 140 at the combine. If Curtis Samuel would have run that 40 at any other combine, we would be hyping him up more than we did. It's just that John Ross broke the record this year. It was very bad timing. I almost feel bad for Curtis Samuel. But the fit with Samuel is tough to judge right now because we just don't know exactly what this Panthers offense is going to look like. Curtis Samuel is going to probably play in the slot, but I think that initially you would think that he's going to just automatically take the Ted Ginn role. But I think all of this together with Christian McCaffrey and that choice, Curtis Samuel in the slot, it tells us that they're not going to be this power run scheme that then just takes a lot of shots deep. I think that Cam Newton is going to have a much, much different season than what we've seen from him before, where he's throwing a lot of passes closer to the line of scrimmage. I'm really excited about it because I think both McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel are great athletes who can do a lot after the catch. It's going to be really fun to watch. It's just a matter of how this front office and how this team and how the coaching staff can bring this all together in changing the offense. I was on Matt Kelly's podcast over at rotowonderworld.com a week or two ago, and I was asked by him which fantasy relevant player could I see his value tank post-draft. Guys who are being, or a guy who's being drafted highly right now, who after the draft, we don't see it coming necessarily, but his value could tank. My answer to that question was Spencer Ware. And the reason is because I thought that there was a possibility that Kansas City was going to draft a running back in the first round. And if they didn't trade up for Pat Mahomes, I wouldn't have been shocked if Kansas City took Dalvin Cook in that first round where they were originally slotted. But a third rounder in Kareem Hunt could still make Spencer Ware less fantasy relevant this year. My running back prospect model likes Hunt despite the fact that he ran a 4.62. His production profile though, which is what I care about more about college production, is very, very strong. He had 51% of his team's attempts. For reference, Dalvin Cook's was 55%, so it's a great number. He accumulated 58% of the team's yards, rushing yards, and he had 14% of the team's receptions, which is also a very strong number. He's really a complete back. And I think that Ware truthers should be at least semi-worried about it, at least enough to push themselves out of a fourth round valuation of Spencer Ware in redraft leagues this year. And since I'm on the topic about the running back model, I tweeted yesterday the rankings of what these prospects look like. They're not fantasy rankings. It's just saying these are the best running backs in the class. These are the guys who are going to have the best careers. And I do adjust for where they get selected. That's important because where they get selected drives or can drive opportunity. Like I said earlier, they're going to get first shots at these jobs. A sixth rounder is not going to get the same opportunity as a first or second rounder. It's not how it works. But I tweeted out this list and Kareem Hunt came above Joe Mixon. And I want to just talk about that a bit. This has nothing to do with the off-the-field stuff with Mixon. My job shouldn't be to evaluate that. And I have no desire to talk about that because it's a very fragile, sad situation, and I'm not educated enough on it. So if you want those kind of takes, this is not the podcast for you. I'm looking strictly at the players. Mixon is a very efficient, very good running back. I think Mixon has arguably the best ceiling in this entire class. He has a way better ceiling than Kareem Hunt. But I also see a production profile for Mixon that's also not that strong because he split carries in college with Samaje Perine. I won't talk about Perine on this show, but I should say, by the way, that I do think that he's in a clear spot to be a potential top 20 running back in fantasy this year. He couldn't have landed in a better spot. Washington is one of those teams that really needed a running back, and he's the dude that they went after. But like I said, ceiling-wise, Mixon is better than Hunt. But I'm looking, you know, my model is to look at things objectively, and it's for me to, like I said, get an initial read on these prospects. It's not for me to say, I think Kareem Hunt is better than Joe Mixon. I don't think that. I think Joe Mixon is better. But what it does tell me is Kareem Hunt isn't bad at all. Kareem Hunt is good. So if we're going back to the original theme here, the Chiefs are telling us that they don't necessarily completely believe Spencer Ware is their guy. That's just my opinion. It's not like Ware was this highly touted prospect out of school either. He's a sixth rounder who totaled 295 carries in 3 years at LSU. He split carries with Jeremy Hill during his junior year before coming out. Spencer Ware, I was really into as a player after seeing him a couple years ago in relief of Jamaal Charles in that backfield. And then he showed a little bit more as a receiver this past year. I don't mind Spencer Ware the player. And if the Chiefs had spent a, let's say, fifth rounder on a running back, maybe I wouldn't be looking at things this way. But third round equity is strong for a running back, and I think Hunt could steal some looks as the season goes on next year, given that he's a pretty decent prospect. There were quotes from Bill O'Brien this offseason talking about how Lamar Miller saw way too many carries in 2016. So it wasn't a shock that the team went out and drafted a running back. Though I do think that, like Kareem Hunt, we should have some pause with Lamar Miller after seeing where they drafted Deontay Foreman. Foreman, by the way, Foreman has just an incredible range of outcomes at the NFL level. He's a big-bodied dude with an insane athletic profile, having run an adjusted for pro day 4.5 40, giving him a speed score that's second best in the class behind Leonard Fournette. But here's where Foreman gets me. And here's why I might not be as high on Foreman as I've seen out there. Because some folks think that Foreman could end up being a top-tier guy in this draft class. He doesn't catch passes. Or he didn't at Texas. All of my research has shown that good running backs, even if they're not pass-catching backs at the NFL level, were still decent pass-catching backs at the college level. And Foreman saw just 2.48% of Texas's receiving yards this past year and 2.9 of their catches. 2.9%. And it's not like he's not on the field. He ran the ball 323 times and caught 7 passes last year. The ratio is just so off. He had over 2,000 yards rushing this past year, his junior season, and over his 3 years at Texas, he caught 13 balls. 13! That's why his floor is scary. Because if you look at it from this perspective, his top comparable to me is Andre Williams. Williams came out of Boston College as a big-bodied back with a strong athletic profile and an above-average speed score. Foreman's a little bit athletic from that perspective, but Andre Williams is a beast. Go Google image right now, Andre Williams, and look at pictures of Andre Williams. The guy looks like he was built out of a shop. Williams was also a prolific college runner. His senior season saw 355 carries, 2,177 yards, and 18 touchdowns. Those marks were all better than Foreman's junior season. Williams, though, caught 0 passes his senior season. He carried the ball 355 times, and he didn't catch a pass. That's why we all make fun of him for his stone hands. Or we did. Now he's pretty obsolete. But over his 4 years at Boston College, he had 10 receptions. It's a very, very similar situation as Deontay Foreman. I don't think Foreman is quite as bad, and the discrepancy between rushing production and receiving production isn't as great with Foreman as it was with Andre Williams. So I'm not here saying he's going to be Andre Williams. I think that we're just looking at what a potential floor could look like for Foreman, and it's not great. With that being said, his upside is pretty awesome. And I think that this draft showed us that the Texans are thinking in their head that they might have made a mistake with Lamar Miller this past offseason, because Lamar Miller probably can't handle a significant load. And this move, I think, should move us off of Lamar Miller a bit in fantasy. Because if you think about Lamar Miller and a compliment to Lamar Miller, it's Deontay Foreman. That's the player that comes to mind. It's an incredibly good fit for Foreman. From a real football perspective, I think this is a great, great selection. The one thing that I will say about Lamar Miller is I do think that his floor is still intact. He's going to be the primary pass catcher there. He's still going to see, let's say he sees closer to a 45 to 50% market share instead of the 59% that he saw last year. That could still yield close to 200 carries in the Houston offense, because we know Houston wants to run the football. And they probably will be able to run the football because their defense is good and their game scripts will probably say that they can. But the touchdown upside in this offense is just garbage, with either a rookie quarterback in Deshaun Watson or Tom Savage starting. And a bigger bodied player in Foreman could take away goal line carries. So even though Lamar Miller had some positive regression coming his way this season from a touchdown standpoint, I think this pick, along with the fact that the offense is just going to be bad, that kind of wiped it away. I think Lamar Miller is more of a firm RB2 rather than the RB1 that people were drafting him as pre-draft. Anytime Bruce Arians takes a wide receiver, you have to take notice. You have to. He's a big reason T.Y. Hilton, John Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, and Mike Wallace are what they are. And that's why I'm going to talk about Chad Williams here. What the front office did with this third round pick couldn't end up being a pretty big deal from a fantasy standpoint. And it doesn't hurt that Williams is a really interesting prospect too. And if we're being honest, there's not a lot of wide receiver opportunity for rookies throughout the NFL. I mentioned Galladay earlier. I think that's a decent opportunity. Chad Williams, not a bad opportunity in Arizona, given the competition there. You have John Brown and J.J. Nelson, who are both smaller receivers that can stretch the field. Larry Fitzgerald, who's on his way out because he's going to be 34 years old this season. Williams is a 6 foot, 210-ish pound guy who can immediately be a target for Carson Palmer. But with that being said, I do want to read this quote from Bruce Arians that I saw that I thought was pretty funny. He says, "I don't like slow guys," which is not surprising because Chad Williams is a good athlete. He's fast. He said, "I don't give an expletive how big they are. You've got to be able to run past people. If you come in big, strong, physical package, that's even better." So what he's saying is he wanted speed first, which he got out of Chad Williams, and Chad Williams is just bigger. He's a way bigger player than someone, say, like John Brown or T.Y. Hilton. Williams is coming from a small school, Grambling State. He has really, really strong market share numbers. He really isn't that far off, and this is going to sound crazy, but in my model, he's not that far off from Mike Williams, and that's with draft equity weighed in. But again, I've talked about this before. I don't think Mike Williams is a very good prospect. I think he's overrated. So take that with a grain of salt. But keep a very, very close eye on Chad Williams, because if Bruce Arians likes him, fantasy footballers need to like him as well. I really wanted Jeremy McNichols to go to Green Bay because I think that he's a great prospect, one of my favorite running backs in this class. But Jamal Williams landing there in the fourth round was not bad. He's not a super athletic back, but he can handle a big workload, or we think that he can. He's a bigger bodied guy. And I think that's what Green Bay saw, that he can complement Ty Montgomery really, really well. But here's the thing. We need to look at what front offices are doing. That's what we're talking about on today's show. The Packers threw two more running back darts in this draft with Aaron Jones and Devontae Mays in the fifth and seventh round. The Jones pick specifically, one that was made just one round later than Williams, tells me that they're not simply looking at Williams as the guy in the team's backfield. And if you read Twitter, if you saw reactions, everyone was so hyped about Jamal Williams going to Green Bay, because we know that Green Bay is one of the best situations for running backs in fantasy football right now. There's a lot of carries that are there for the taking. And when they got Aaron Jones, that's what got me excited, because Aaron Jones is one of my favorite running backs in this class. He was a beast production-wise at UTEP. He came through as one of the most agile running backs at the combine too. He profiles a bit as a good pass catcher at the NFL level, But I already mentioned that I love that. Part of the reason I love that too, aside from the fact that good NFL running backs were good pass catchers in college, one of the reasons I really love good pass catchers is because it allows them to get on the field as a third down back, let's say. They can get on the field and then they can showcase what they're all about to then potentially get early down looks. The draft capital spent on Williams versus Jones was not significantly different. And I think folks are automatically thinking that Williams is the guy in Green Bay. My overall expectation though in this backfield, I still think Ty Montgomery still sees a decent amount of work through the air and he'll be involved in early downs a bit. And I really think that the reason the Packers did what they did is because they're not going to want to spend high equity picks at the running back position. It's a fairly smart organization. I know they got Eddie Lacy a couple years ago, but that didn't pan out. They didn't want to spend high picks on running backs because they needed to fix that defense. And so what they're doing is they're throwing later round darts because we know there's a big drop off in how players perform after the third round. They're throwing these darts and hoping that a guy hits. That's a genius way of going about the running back position. And of these three guys that they drafted, Aaron Jones is my favorite prospect of the three. And he's going to be the cheaper running back in fantasy, I would assume, or at least today. Again, it's May 1st, so everything's going to change. But Aaron Jones is the guy that I would be looking at and targeting until we see more reports. Jamal Williams could end up being a beast. Camp reports come out and he's going ham. And the coaching staff loves him. And he ends up being the guy to draft. That's fine. My opinion will change. But Aaron Jones is a guy that I'm very, very excited about in Green Bay. I'll be honest, I expected Indianapolis to spend an earlier round pick on a running back. Maybe not a first, maybe not a second, but at least a third. In a pretty deep draft class, though, the Colts, who have only Frank Gore, Robert Turbin, and Josh Ferguson at running back, drafted their only running back, Marlon Mack, in the late fourth round. But to just continue the theme of these guys who are good pass-catching backs, I like Marlon Mack. I like this fit a lot. He caught almost 12.5% of his team's balls last season, another good number. He had an above-average speed score running a 4.5 40. I think that he's a good fit. But if you look at the way that scouts looked at Marlon Mack, or how some people view Marlon Mack, they view him more as a scat back at the NFL level. And what that tells us is that there's a chance, a strong chance, that Indianapolis is just completely content in 2017 with Frank Gore as their lead rusher. This draft was a huge, huge win in redraft leagues, or I mean, if you own Frank Gore in Dynasty too, for Frank Gore. And that's amazing because Frank Gore is about to turn 34. Marlon Mack, I love the pick. I think he has a lot of potential in Indianapolis. I think he could play a Chris Thompson type role for the Colts in a high volume passing offense year one. But Frank Gore is still there, man. Frank Gore is still going strong. I'm probably going to own a decent amount of Frank Gore in redraft leagues this year. How about the Ravens, guys? They didn't select a single skill player in this draft, meaning that team is completely cool with where they stand offensively, which is kind of mind-blowing. Because their current wide receivers are Michael Campanaro, Mike Wallace, Rashad Perriman. They've got four tight ends, actually six on the roster, with none of them being standout, uber effective pass catchers given their age, or at least proven ones. And then in the backfield, they have a bunch of Jags. They got Talaferro, Kenneth Dixon, who's suspended, Danny Woodhead, and Terrence West. Terrence West is the definition of just a guy. In an offense that struggled last season, they were seventh worst according to NumberFire's schedule adjusted metrics. That's crazy, right? It seems insane. The only guy that I think that I'm going to be touching this year is Rashad Perriman. There's a lot of ambiguity because he hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's only 23 years old. He was a first rounder in 2015. Perriman's a good buy this year because there's not much competition. That offense is bad. I was pretty shocked that they didn't do anything with their skill positions, but hey, that's where we're at with Baltimore. And it looks like Rashad Perriman is just the only guy that we're going to be excited about from a fantasy standpoint this year. So before I go, there was one thing that happened in this draft that I need to talk about. It's really easy for us, especially me as an analytics person, to look at these players as numbers, because that's what they are when it comes to fantasy football. They're essentially robots to us who are giving us production for our enjoyment. But the real reason I love sports, and why you love sports, and why I believe we need sports, is because of its blend of humans giving their all in competition, something we all can relate to, even if the competition isn't a sport, and the creation of almost a new family dynamic that's completely derived from pride for teams and their fans. There are some people who just don't understand that. They don't understand sports. And as a result, and I've talked about this on here many times, being a football analyst makes me question all the time if what I'm doing with my life is really worthwhile enough. Am I really making an impact, I'll say. The answer to that is that it's never going to be as great of an impact as it can be, but I'll tell you guys what. When James Conner was drafted by the Steelers on Friday night, those existential feelings were completely gone. Because when you're talking about someone who went through what James Conner went through, a guy who would get chemo treatments and be at practice with a surgical mask on just hours later, showing everyone that quite literally nothing can get in your way when you're chasing a dream, when you see that person then reach their dream, it doesn't matter what the degree of importance you think sports have on society. That draft pick, a guy who was born and raised in Erie, Pennsylvania, played college football at the University of Pittsburgh, who play their games at Heinz Field, the same field the Steelers do, to see that guy then get drafted by the Steelers? That's special, man. And without sports, you're not always going to be able to capture that kind of inspiration. Without sports, the country might not have ever met James Conner. I want to thank everyone for listening to episode 10. I really, really appreciate it. Again, to subscribe, go to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, search for Number Fire NFL Podcasts, subscribe, and never miss a show again. I'll talk to you guys later in the week.